The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I had an age shock just recently. I was at a hotel. Well, my room was up several floors, so I got on the elevator. And it's a good thing it was just me. I started singing along with the elevator music. I think it was the Beatles, something. Violins, some kind of accompaniment, and I was singing along with it. Yeah, I know it. I'm getting there. And the fact that I knew the words to the Beatles song that came out in the 60s, well, I'd like to think I read about it, but that's not all it. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. On E-Person Monday, we take on the emails that we get. Yeah, I know. Every once in a while I slip and call them males. They are actually emails, e-females. You can't even say female anymore because it's got male in it. So I'm really trying to be careful. But I get a lot of them. And typically when I do address an email on the show, I will tell the person. I will send a little email to them and say, I addressed your email on da-da-da-da-da, and they can go to avemariaradio.net, the archives, the radio archives. They're all there. Some people say, I'd like to hear that particular show or that particular call again. That's the way to do it. avemariaradio.net, the radio archives. I was thinking about this the other day. I was sitting with a client. It was something that prompted me, and I get this a lot in therapy. People spend a fair amount of time being agitated or upset because somebody isn't acting right. And I think I asked the question, do you expect people to act right? Now, using the word right, meaning morally right, or thoughtful, or considerate, or fair-minded, just in anything that you might say decent. Maybe that's a better word. I expect people to ask decent. And the person said, well, yes, I do. Are you saying, Dr. Ray, that you don't want people to act right? Well, I do, but this is not heaven. And I realize that if you want to distress yourself, expect that people are going to do the right and good thing or are going to act the right way toward you, and that includes saying the right things toward you. Expect it. Because if you expect it, you're going to be disappointed. And it's the disappointment that leads to the frustration. If you recognize that people can really act any way, and that's one of the big mega themes I've learned as a psychologist, I'm not shocked by how people can think or how they can act or what they can do or how inconsistent they can be. I'm not shocked by this. But if you live in a world where your social circle is relatively limited, you got some close friends, close family, and for the most part, that's 90% of your social interactions, then it's easier to expect people to act good. Unfortunately, that's not reality. We don't. If you want that to the degree that you want it, I would go so far as to say to the degree that you demand it. And I don't mean demand in the sense of telling them the way they should act. I mean in your own mind. You have this ongoing thought that says you should act that way. You're going to get very, very upset. A lot. It's hard to live even keel. And that's a good way to live, by the way, is even keel. Your emotions aren't going to bounce all over the place. When you can't accept that people aren't always going to act right, they're going to say things they shouldn't say. They're going to be living by a double standard. They accuse you of the very same things they do. You're thinking to yourself, doesn't she see that she does that? No, she doesn't. Well, she should. Well, that would be nice. But it's not happening. I noticed that. And I noticed that particularly among people who are more faith-filled and try to live a moral life themselves. They're doing this. And I hear this from people all the time. Well, I don't do that. Well, good. You shouldn't, because you're following a set of moral principles that you believe in. But when you say, I don't do that, is there the unspoken, they shouldn't do that? They're not you. You do the things that are good and right independent of what they do. In one of my books, I talked about what I called the law of social reciprocity. It basically means if I treat you good, I expect you to treat me good. If I act right toward you, I expect you to act right toward me. If I'm easy to get along with, I expect you to be easy to get along with. If I don't do that to you, I don't expect you to do that to me. The problem with the law of social reciprocity, you can't control what other people are going to do. You do what is good because that is the way you wish to live. You're guided by God's instruction. But they may not. Or they may want to, but they're weaker. Or it's not as important. I cannot tell you how much human misery is created when people have a mindset that says, and it's an operating mindset, it's a theme in their lives, you should act right. Well, it certainly would be a much better world, would it not? But it's not heaven. And a lot of people aren't going to act right. And some of those people are at the very, very close contacts in your life. They don't act right. And when I say right, I don't necessarily mean just morally right. I mean mature or fair-minded or open-minded or thoughtful or charitable or giving. These are all ways we want people to act. But if they don't, and we expect them to, that gap is going to be a lot of frustration. If you're not surprised and you're not shocked by how someone can act, especially someone that you think shouldn't act that way, a spouse, a parent, an adult child, shouldn't act that way. Yeah, but they are. Now, you're either going to try to do something about it if you can, but in many cases you can't. Because part of not acting right is I don't see that I'm not acting right. Part of being critical is I don't see that I'm critical. And you've tried to tell me, or you've tried to show me, or we got into arguments and you bring the point up, but I don't agree. Now what are you left to do? Well, you're left to step back and say, Maybe I should ease up on my expectation that people are going to act right. 877 is the number, but there is no number today. That's why I only gave you part of it. When we come back, I got some e-persons lined up. I'm Dr. Ray.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 40 years of experience, 17,000 current students, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plan, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right, pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton, some of our children. Tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
I've seen the difference in my son since he's been at Ave Maria. He's happy, he's excited about what he's going to do with his degree, and he's living his faith.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
You know, another thing I realize I'm getting older. I got into an argument with a friend the other day about pension plans, you know, which was the best pension plan. Used to talk about sports and whether the Browns should have called a draw play on 3rd and 12. They used to talk about what we were going to do this Saturday, or used to talk about the one play in that softball game to turn the game around. And now I'm just talking about pension plans. We used to do that. You know, a guy would come up to bat, and after I left the outfield in my late 30s, because that's when you start to run and your head bounces, you know. So I came into the mound and I pitched, and I could throw strikes, and so that made me valuable. And we used to say, good power, watch him left center gap, pulls the ball hard, be aware, will scoot down the left field line. Now I say, because I play with older guys, portfolio heavily loaded with gold, he's got a money market certificate, expires in 6 months, watch him. Yep, it's kind of changed. This e-person comes from Walker. My wife and I are considering adoption. However, this is one of the big ones, and this is, I hate this stuff because it just scares people away. If you're going to be scared away, let me give you the real reasons to be scared away, not this one. However, I've heard that adoptees suffer from trauma associated with separation from their birth mom. And then he put in parentheses, even this, if this occurs when they are newborns. I say, you got that? In other words, this kid is irreparably damaged for life because of some type of separation. And I can sort of understand it if this was a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old. who was removed from a neglectful parent. I got that. There's going to be some fallout. There's no question about that. Birth? They aren't even at all aware in any way. So somehow you are forced to say this is some sort of unconscious psychological process. And I don't know what Walker has been reading regarding this stuff. But I know that's not uncommon out there. As a matter of fact, well, let me see his questions here, then I'll comment. What does it take to be a parent to someone who has trauma from birth, the old birth trauma, that may follow them throughout life? Do all adoptees suffer trauma? No, not at all. I've got 10 children. 6 we got at infancy, 4 we got later. None of them have birth or separation trauma. They may have dumb decisions that they make about life, and they may have certain lack of anticipation of consequences. But you can't trace that back to, well, you know what happened was they've got some kind of unconscious separation anxiety. Now, this was one of the more common ones that was really on the adoption landscape for a long time. Back in the 90s, I was getting a disproportionate amount of adoptive parents coming into my office. And the themes were similar. This child is hard to raise. This child is either oppositional or deceptive, or sexually curious prematurely. And some of these kids were adopted a little older, but some of them were adopted at birth. So how to account for this? Why is this happening? And this was particularly pronounced in those parents who had biological kids first. They had natural kids for their family first, which was a much smoother process, and then they adopted maybe a sibling group of 2, or they adopted a child at birth who was removed from birth mom because there was drug and alcohol use and bathed the child in the womb. And the theories, the dominant theories at the time, and this was one of them, was that there was a sense of identity issues. Who am I? Why was I given up? There was the sense of trauma. Like Walker was talking about, separation from birth mom, there's trauma associated with that. You know, the birth mom and the child link is very strong. So therefore, obviously, there's got to be some psychological repercussions. And I remember thinking even back then, given what the parents were describing, that no, much of this is not psychological. Much of it is neurological. In other words, these poor kids with the drugs and the alcohol in the womb affected their neurological development. Now, doesn't mean they were necessarily developmentally delayed. And to all intents and purposes, they could do fine in school. But there was a struggle being socialized, and sometimes a struggle being moralized, that was pervasive. It was there. And I thought, no, this is neurological. Very early in life, things were not given to this child that they could have gotten if they were in a healthy womb and a loving environment the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years of their lives. Sure enough, since then, the research has come out. And it's basically said, yes, alcohol, drug in the womb does a number on a kid. Now, some kids survive it. Now, don't. This is not a one-on-one relationship. But more often, the kids struggle. So, Walker, you don't have to be concerned about some kind of identity issues, some kind of birth trauma. You don't have to be concerned about that. It is more likely, depending upon the adoption circumstances, that if there's going to be some struggles that follow a child through childhood, it's going to be because of their beginning. What was their very earliest life like? And that includes their life in the womb. Two of our children we adopted at age 4. Birth mom was heavily into drugs, heavily in the womb. She also had hep C. The kids were not necessarily given stability the first year and a half or two, and then they went into foster care. So that has to have an impact. Now, are either of those children in trouble with the law? No. Are either of those children abusing drugs and alcohol? No. But they have had their own growing up struggles in terms of decision making. So, Walker, I guess I would say this to you, my friend. Do not be afraid to adopt, but recognize if the child has not gotten a healthy start, if in fact he's gotten an unhealthy one, there could be issues in terms of how easily he is socialized, how much he absorbs your parenting. That's not unusual. It's not a given. It's not, okay, well, he's been drug or alcohol exposed, or he didn't get drug or alcohol exposed, but the first 2 years of his life, we don't even know where he was until Children's Services finally found mom and placed this very neglected child into a foster care setting. That makes it more likely that he will have some struggles, but that doesn't guarantee that he'll have struggles. Some of my children, personally, had rough beginnings, but they're doing fine. Some of them had rough beginnings, and they struggle. So that's, I think, the nature of what you're asking. The good news is, you don't really have to worry about the birth trauma following the child through life. That's psychological theory. But you do have to be concerned, or, no, I shouldn't even use that word, aware. You do have to be aware that because of what was lacking in this child's healthy beginnings, it could show itself throughout childhood and into adulthood. And I know there are adoptive parents listening right now and go, yeah, that's it. That's it. That's exactly what we've been experiencing. That's it. As a matter of fact, I get a fair amount of parents who are adoptive parents who come into my office. Disproportionately so. I don't know the percentage of adoptive parents in the broad population. I don't know what it is. 5, 6, 8%. I don't know. But the percent of parents who come into my office because of an adopted child's struggles to grow up or to be raised is higher than that. So, hopefully, Walker, that is helpful. It was a long answer to your question. But the thing that frustrates me is that many people are scared away from adoption. And people ask me this, should we adopt this child's 4 years old and he's had really a rough upbringing, but we have a chance to take him into our home. I say, well, sure. But recognize that it isn't going to be automatic, that because you have love and stability and discipline, that it's going to be totally smooth. It may not be. As long as you know that, as long as you recognize that, as long as you know that at age 8 he could pilfer something from the store and you're going to have to go back where your other kids never did that, but this one did, just be aware that stuff can happen and you don't press the panic button.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Suffering in the world, personal suffering. One of the biggest things that keeps people from really giving themselves over to the Lord or joining an organized religion. Suffering doesn't seem to make sense. Why do children suffer? Why are there wars? Why is there persecution? Why are some people poor, others rich? Why is there such an imbalance? And on and on and on. A loving God wouldn't do that. Well, God doesn't do that. First of all, we did it to ourselves because in the beginning, right, we chose incorrectly. And then sin came into the world. It was not supposed to be like this, but God gives us free will. He does not want to force himself on us because otherwise we would be puppets. But how many of us can look back and forget what came out of a particular hard time? You don't learn really good, strong lessons when everything is going great.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I want you to have such confidence in the Lord that you'll find such hope and see the beauty of the Lord, the majesty of God. What did our Lord say, huh? If your sins are as scarlet, oh, what? What's going to happen? They shall be made white as snow.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Yeah, I'm getting tired of people calling me up at 9 o'clock at night. And they say, I'm sorry, did I wake you? My kids are doing that. Dad, you in bed yet? No, I've been in bed since 7:30, guys. What's up? I used to play the organ in nightclubs. And we didn't start till 9 o'clock. Typically, we played from 9 to 1 or 9 to 2. Now, recently, about 5-6 years ago, I went to a restaurant and I told the owner, I said, I'm willing to play for you and it's for free just to come in and entertain a little bit. And by 9 o'clock, I mean, I went in around 7. And by 9, I was ready to go home. That's it. How did that happen? All right, let's go back to your messages. This is E-Person Monday, variant of The Doctor Is In. Hi, Dr. Ray. I want to know how to unentitle my children. Well, entitlement is a human characteristic that is very easily sustained and bred and maintained, and it is much more easily maintained now in our incredibly materialistic and plentiful culture. She says, I don't know how it has happened, but somehow they seem to think they're entitled to good grades without trying. And when we recommend that they study harder, they break down and cry, tell us they're so depressed. It would be funny if they didn't seem halfway serious. My husband and I look at each other and scratch our heads. We both came from very middle-class upbringings, and you simply had to work for what you wanted, which is a good thing. It's a very good thing. That is why a culture, and I'm going to digress here for a moment, that is why when you have things like a guaranteed minimal income, or automatically we will support you when you do this. You do something to the human spirit. If there are those who truly need it, absolutely. But we've expanded it to people who are quite capable and we hurt them by doing this. My husband has been very successful, so we tend to just sign our kids up for sports or pay for an extracurricular that is good for them. They have everything they need, and then here is the key line to the e-person. And then my husband is also very free and easy with giving them gifts at all times of the year. So I wonder, Dr. Ray, if that is the source of the entitlement. But we keep having to go back and forth with the doctor about ADHD medication and depression medication because we don't want any serious harm to come to our children. But I wonder about the entitlement piece and if there's something we can do to entitle our kids. Well, Mom, I don't know how old your kids are. I don't know how long this has been going on. My sense is they're either adolescents or teens. So I don't know. But there's a very, very simple rule. Very simple. The more kids get materially, the more they expect it. And the more they get materially, the more upset they are when they don't get it. Very, very simple rule. How do you unentitle kids? Well, you don't give them everything you can afford to give them. My son said to me once, he's 27 now, he said, Dad, I always thought when we were kids that you didn't give us a lot of the stuff that our friends had. And I thought it was because you couldn't afford it because you had 10 kids. But I realized, Dad, that wasn't it, was it? I said, no, it wasn't. I could afford it. I didn't want to do it. It wasn't good for you. Yeah, it is tough to fight the materialistic entitlement culture. There's no question about it. And that's one of the most common questions I get from parents. My kids are spoiled. And we try not to spoil them. Yeah, but you understand they're living in a culture that is unbelievably materially comfortable. More than the world has ever known. So they don't have to put up with getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and going and getting logs to throw in the burner. They don't have to walk to school. They have air conditioning. They have hot showers. They have all the food they want. They have all kinds of clothes that they get rid of because somebody somewhere says you can't wear those anymore because they're out of style. The human condition cannot deal with that. It leads to, I expect it. Why not? I deserve it. Now, what do you do about it? Well, I don't know if you can undo the entitlement mentality. I really don't. But you can try. You can cut back, at least cut back, on the freedom and the goodies and the perks that they get because they breathe. You know, nowadays you get your hair cut, you get 3 rubber spiders. You know, your catechism verses, you get 5 bags of candy, 6 sticker books. Grandma dies the Toys R Us truck up every couple of weeks and drops a load off. There's so much coming at them from so many directions. They have multiples of everything. I use the stuffed animal example. You know, lots of kids have 15, 20, 25, 30 stuffed animals. It's not unusual for a parent to say to me, she can't get on her bed. She can't sleep in her bed because there's too many stuffed animals. And that may look like a cutesy thing, but it's just one small sliver in the old gimme, gimme, gimme. What would happen if she had one stuffed animal? Would it mean more to her than having 24? What is she collecting? One of the things we did, we had 10 kids of really bike driving age. I mean, it was when Andrew was 18, Lizzie was 5 or 6. So everybody was pretty much bike driving age. Did we have 10 bikes? No. We had 3. And they were used, too. We'd go down the street where this guy would repair and refurbish bikes, and we'd always see what he had. When one of our bikes broke, we'd go down there and pay $30 for another bike. Yeah, it wasn't the latest. It wasn't the greatest. It wasn't 10 gears. It wasn't a mountain bike for $490. That's probably pretty cheap now. We didn't do it. Now, did that make my kids unentitled? No, I think they looked around them and saw. But at the same time, they lived incredibly comfortably. We had air conditioning in the house and in the car. They had very comfortable beds. They had food. They had lots of food. They had a variety of food. They had games and toys and things to occupy their time. They had a big backyard. So they had all this stuff. And it is so hard to unentitle kids. But you got to start. You got to give less materially. I'll give you a few more examples on that on the other side. I'm Dr. Rick.
And now, the EWTN Family Prayer with Father Joseph.
Family, a prayer that we pray together is a powerful prayer. So please pray together with me, our EWTN Family Prayer. Today we pray for those who are suffering with Parkinson's disease. Lord Jesus Christ, consolation of the afflicted, you are our refuge. We pray for those who are suffering the effects of Parkinson's disease. As they lose their physical strength and abilities, increase their spiritual strength and abilities. Renew their inner spirit day after day, and through their share in your sufferings, give the grace of conversion to sinners. In their weakness, reveal your strength. Give peace and joy to those who care for them. Amen.
What are some major offenses against the Eighth Commandment? The Catholic Catechism states that false witness, that is, lying in court, and perjury, which is lying under oath, are especially grave sins because they are stated publicly. Such false statements contribute to the condemnation of the innocent and the exoneration of the guilty or the increased sentence of the accused. If we assume the moral fault of another without sufficient evidence, we commit the sin of rash judgment. We offend by the sin of detraction when we reveal the faults of another without an objectively valid reason to someone who did not know them. Calumny is the sin of lying about another person, thereby harming their reputation and contributing to occasions of false judgments regarding them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Thank you for joining me here on the Doctor's Inn Monday through Friday, co-production of the Ave Maria Radio Network, as well as the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, which is the big umbrella. I'm delighted to be a part of it. This is E-Person Monday. It's our variant where I look at the E-persons that come in and attempt to answer the ones that I can, at least that are appropriate for the show. Some of them are not really asking for any kind of direction. They are simply saying, have you read this book? Are you familiar with this? Here's an article for you to take a look at. Do you know anybody in the area that you could refer to as counselors? That's a lot of the questions. I was talking a little bit. I'm going to just continue for a moment about the entitlement mentality. What do you do as a parent? How do you fight the fact that we live in such an incredibly comfortable culture materially? And small business people will tell you this. They hire younger people, and the younger people just expect to have certain comforts, certain freedoms, certain perks of working there. And a lot of them are unreliable. And part of that, there's no doubt in my mind, part of that is related to so many being raised in such a materially gimme, gimme, gimme atmosphere. I'll give you a small example. Now, as a parent, you look at things that you can do that really are countercultural but send a message. For example, there were times when we went to a fast food place and the kids were younger and they wanted the kids' meal. And the kids' meal came with a toy. We told the clerk, please keep the toy. The clerk looked at us like, in our country, sir, in our country, the toy comes with the meal. You didn't pay for that? And I didn't explain myself too often. I said, that's okay. Well, we're going to give it to you because you have to have it because it comes with it. Okay. So we just took it and didn't give it to the kids. Why? Well, think about it. In all of human history, who got to order from a list of food? Who got to say, I want that and I want that and I want that? Human history. The kings, maybe, very wealthy. And even they didn't have the variety we have. Go to a buffet. No king ate like that. So at least we did a little bit to try to mitigate the impact of that. Now, all of that interacts with the child's temperament. All of it interacts with other learning experiences. Yes, of course. It's a very complex interplay. However, where you can as a parent, don't go with the material flow of the culture, because your kids are going to get stuff. I'll give you some. My daughter, she was, I forget what, first grade, maybe? And they got to go to the goodie bag every time they completed some kind of reading assignment. Well, Hannah was a good reader. She liked to read. I think we were on top of it, but maybe we just didn't realize the numbers. She had earned 49 different erasers. Why? Well, because erasers were in the goodie bag, and she just wanted to collect erasers. Now, here's what we did, and I know there are those of you going to disagree with this, but we told Hanny, Han, honey, pick the two you like the best, and then give the other 47 back to your teacher. I can only imagine the teacher's reaction. What the heck is this? What is with these people? Hanny didn't need 49 erasers for reading. She would read anyway. And this kind of accumulation of, I read, therefore I get. Did that change much in Hanny's trajectory of growing up? No. But it made a statement. And parents make statements all the time. Small example, when we would go out to eat, only two kids got drinks, the rest got water. You waited for your turn as it rotated around. And believe me, they know whose turn it was. Just two. Not everybody's going to get a drink. But you think about it, most parents go out, and again, they don't have 10 kids, but even with two or three, the kids say, well, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. And the parents go, okay. It's all too easy to be materialistic. All right, let me, oh boy. Here's my situation, Dr. Ray. My parents were married in church but divorced by the time I was two because my father was abusive to my mom. She had to leave him. My father refused to pay any child support, and his sister in Connecticut helped him and protected him. He quit jobs, went back to Italy, lived with his family there. I was raised by my mother and my grandmother. My grandmother lived for me, worked 6 days a week, paid rent, bills, food, clothes, doctors, Catholic school tuition, books, birthdays, Christmas, First Communion, confirmation, graduations, even my first car. She did all of this with no help. My dad's family contributed nothing and helped him instead. He never called me. He has never faced consequences till this day. He lives only for himself. His family excuses it. That he's not responsible, even though he got married, remarried, divorced again, he drove a car, worked steadily, and took care of himself. It's true, he has a personality disorder. Now, she says this, I don't know, but I don't accept he's not responsible. Recently, I found out by accident that my father bought a condo in a state with money his father left him. So my grandfather rewarded him even though he completely ignored his own child. My cousin said that I was being ridiculous to say that my grandfather should have left me something. But was it ridiculous that my grandmother gave her life for me? I'd love your professional opinion. Well, this is one of those situations, as I was talking about in my opening monologue, where people, they're not going to act right. They're not going to do what you would hope or expect they would do. They see it very differently. Now, they may see it badly, but they see it differently. And what you do is you put yourself at their mercy, because I'm going to be miserable because of what you did. I never want to give my emotions to someone like that. Of course you give your emotions to people you love, but I mean, I don't want to give my control over my own emotions because somebody else acts mean-spiritedly. Now, would it have been nice if grandfather would have included her? Yeah. But he didn't. And you can say all you want about how they made excuses for him, how they enabled him, and then they rewarded him for all this incredibly irresponsible, immoral behavior. And the only response to that is, yep, your grandmother did the good and right thing. She raised you. She loved you. She helped you be who you are today. And if there's anybody to feel sorry for it, probably would be your dad. Because given what you describe, he's had a lot of struggles in life. And I don't know where he's at with his faith. But if there is a God, you're going to stand in front of him. So she says, she closes with, I'm still suffering while my father gets away with everything. You don't need to suffer. You're suffering because of the way you look at it. Injustice was done. Yes, it was. However it was done. So at this point, you accept it and you move forward and you say to yourself, I do not want to dwell on this because the more I dwell on it, the more miserable I feel. And believe me, when people say, but that's just my emotions, I can't help it, much of the time they're dwelling on it. And as you dwell, you feed them the nasty emotions. This is Dr. Ray.
The most amazing saints from modern times, John Paul II, Maximilian Kolbe, and Maria Faustina with the Divine Mercy. This is Steve Ray. We invite you to join us on a pilgrimage to Poland and experience this incredible Catholic country, the land of saints, Catholic culture, gorgeous churches and shrines, and delicious food. Join us next April as we again visit Poland, one of our favorite pilgrimage destinations.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net. Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit avemariafunds.com.
Did you know my mom's gonna have a baby? We heard the heartbeat and my dad said this is gonna be someone very special.
Hello, my name is Marianne Koharski. I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America. We hope you'll consider supporting the work of Pro-Life Across America. Your gift will help offer life-saving alternatives to those in need. Visit our website at prolifeacrossamerica.org or like us on Facebook.
Pro-Life Across America.
We are the pro-life generation, passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices, not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, thanks for joining me here on the Doctor Is Any Person Monday. One last one. There was an episode some time ago on Living Right with Dr. Ray, your TV show, that you and Father Larry talked about people who say something and claim a lot of, or many, or several people said it, or agreed with them. In other words, citing witnesses. I'm not the only one who thinks this about you. My mother-in-law has said this before. Yeah, that people cite witnesses, okay? Both seem to agree to ignore these statements. Well, I must ask you this. Do you think the same when someone shares a compliment? I'm not sure what she means by this, but I'll find out here. I feel that this has happened many times. For example, for many years, we didn't have the pastors leading the Stations of the Cross during Lent. So several laity did it and used various stations. Not too many people attended. When another pastor came, a total of 6 people asked me why the new pastor was not leading the stations. I told him, ask Father, be polite, invite him, and let him know your thoughts. A year went by, and again, it was in the bulletin listing the passway, the pastor listing the passway, meaning the stations were led by the laity. The pastor had called me about something else, and as the call was ending, I asked him myself about this, and he said, oh, well, no one has ever asked me until you, so I assumed everybody was just happy with others leading the stations. So I told him how many had come to me, and he was surprised. And since the other group had already planned theirs, Father offered traditional stations on Thursday evenings during Lent. So many more people came that in the following years, he led them on Friday evenings. So, Dr. Ray, it seems important to ask yourself, whatever the subject, would I believe that that person or assume he or she was exaggerating versus someone telling me many people do not like my ideas? I'm not quite sure what she means there. Let me try this again. Would I believe that person or assume he or she was exaggerating? Okay, I think she's talking about when somebody cites a witness. I'm not the only one who thinks this. There are others who think this, or maybe they'll even cite a name. Versus someone telling me many people do not like my idea. Well, it would seem it's kind of the same thing. If someone says, well, your idea of Father leading is not, I'm not the only one who would rather have the laity. There's other people. There were people in the stations group that think like I do. Now, that may be. See, that's the thing. It doesn't automatically mean when you cite a witness that the witnesses don't think that. They may. However, I don't know if they want to be cited. If I say, yeah, you know, I'm not the one who thinks you do that. Your brother has told me about this. He doesn't like this about you either. Now, would the brother like you to say that to whomever it is you're saying it to? Would he like that? Would he like being cited as a witness? That's kind of throwing him under the bus. And then that does tarnish the relationship. If I believe you and you tell me that there are other people who don't like me too or don't like what I do also, and you even mention names, how am I going to react to those people in the future? I thought they liked me. I didn't know they thought like that. Assuming I believe you. So, don't do that. Stop it. If you're going to argue with someone, don't add credibility to your argument by citing names of people who agree with you. Or even if you don't cite names. Just the generic, vague, I'm not the only one who thinks this. Yeah, that, of course, leads to, well, who are the others? And even if you don't give an answer to that, it leaves the person wondering, well, okay, then what have you told other people about me so that they do agree with you? Yeah, this is just up one side and down the other, not a good thing to do. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Garandi, program Monday through Friday. Thanks, Eric Dumont, for what you do on that end. I appreciate so very much the company. And good Lord permitting, I'll see you tomorrow when we can take calls and interface. Well, actually, inter-ear. Walk with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.